good to be back with all of you again here at the Surge. So here's what we're going to do. Everything that we're doing this morning is going to be interactive. So be prepared to talk with each other. That means that in just a few moments you may need to like group together so you can actually have a conversation with someone other than yourself. And then I'm going to have a chance to be able to hear back from you as we begin to learn from each other. So what we're going to be talking about this morning is very simply this. It's a matter of integrating. How do we go about integrating the values of God or the values of the kingdom of heaven into everyday life? How do we incorporate kingdom values into our work, into our relationships, into our families, into our hobbies, into everything that we do? And what you're going to discover in this process is that as you begin to take the values of the kingdom of heaven and integrate them into every facet of your life, in relationship with unchurched people, life becomes a load of fun. So it doesn't matter if you're in elementary school or middle school or high school, whether you're a young adult or single or married or a grandparent, you're going to find that there are principles here that we're going to be talking about this morning that have the opportunity to really begin to shift how we live life together. It wasn't but about 5 years ago that I was living here in Sterling, Virginia, and I was talking with, my good friends just came in, I was talking with the general manager of the local Costco in Sterling at that time. His name's Daryl. And I was sharing with him that we had worked with the local community, 450 people, to package 40,000 meals to feed children in need. And we were celebrating this moment together. And then Daryl asked me this question. He said, "So what are you going to do with, what are you doing with all that food?" And I said, "Well, we're going to take it and ship it to Haiti to feed kids who are struggling with hunger." And Daryl, being a 6'3" tall, large man, looked at me and his face sunk. And he goes, "Now what are you going to do to feed the 60,000 children right here in Northern Virginia who are struggling with hunger?" And in that moment, it was as if Jesus was just poking me in the chest through this unchurched leader, businessman, and going, "Yeah, Club Bunny, what are you going to do to feed my children right here at home?" And that began the beginning of generosity meetings. I looked back at Daryl and I said, "Daryl, I don't have an answer to your question. But in 3 to 6 months, I'll come back to you with an answer." And that was the birth of generosity. And yet, Daryl and I are still in a wonderful relationship. Matter of fact, we had a call the other day. He's still on his own spiritual journey. He's still speaking truth into the things that we're doing. And so what we're going to begin to discover this morning is that there is a huge need around us. And it doesn't matter if a person is a Christian or a non-Christian, or what I refer to as a pre-Christian. People want to live the values of the kingdom of heaven, and they're waiting for you to invite them into that story with you. And we're going to begin to understand this morning why that is, and really the steps that we can take and the confidence that we can have in beginning to make those invitations, again, regardless of our age or our place in life, or how much we have or how much we don't have. So as we get going this morning, every one of you should have a handout on your table. And if you just kind of flip past the cover sheet there and go to the next page, there are two questions that I want us to answer as we get going this morning. The first question is this: what is the purpose of the church? And when we answer that question this morning, what is the purpose of the church? Why don't we answer that for the Surge? What do you see as the purpose of the Surge? And then the second question is this: how do you want the Surge to be perceived in the larger community? What's the purpose of the church, and how do you want the church, your church, to be perceived in the larger community? So I'm going to give you about 4 minutes. Take two and a half minutes per question. Discuss this with someone. If you need to move your seats around to do that, go ahead. And then we're going to come back together, and I want to hear your thoughts on this. So we're talking about purpose and perception of the church. So go ahead and dive in, and I'll pull us together in just a few minutes.
Tough question.
Great answer! to worship God.
Yep.
That's fine.
Eric, you're doing well. All right. Another purpose of the church.
Introduce people to God.
Introduce people to God.
We came up with, we give something back to the community, and we do it out of love, or we're giving back to others, but we don't expect anything back in return.
Good, okay. I'm just going to pop up give back. I think you really kind of hit two pieces there, and that is that the purpose of the church is to love. If we understand that God is love, and love is God, we're talking the core value of the kingdom of heaven is love. Bottom line, everything that we do needs to come back to be here. Jeff?
Spread the gospel.
Okay, spread the gospel. I'm going to put that under introduce people to God. Is that okay with you? Excellent. Someone else? Say again? Yes. Jack's always been about the gospel. So. Other thoughts? Do you have any thoughts back at your table?
Another phrase, Lord, be a role model.
Be a role model, okay. I'm going to put mentor, which begins to play into the whole discipleship piece.
Mm-hmm.
That if we're going to be a role model, that is a major piece of discipling people. That we're modeling for them, we're inviting them into a life of living the values of God. And so that happens through a relationship. Very good. Well, how do you want to be perceived in the community? How do you want to be perceived in the community? Yeah?
Not really perceived as a place, but more of a environment
where people will be back. So less of a place, less of a program.
The people are the place.
Yes. Can I put relational? Because the moment we go beyond place, it really is about community, it's about relationship, it's about the environment that we're creating as we know each other and are known by each other. Yeah. How else do you want to be perceived?
The help I need.
Say that again?
The help versus people in need.
Yep. So helping people in need. Let's define that real quick. What's the need?
I'm not talking about necessarily financial, but moral support.
Yes, I was hoping you'd go there. Because too often as a church, what we do is we look at ourselves as being in, and then we look at people being out, and we see all these tangible needs, but there are so many needs that go beyond. One of the things that we're doing with Generosity Feeds right now is we've partnered with the opening of several Mod Pizza stores around the area. And when I talk with the employees at those grand openings, one of the core values of that business is to do what is right. Do what's right. Doesn't matter what the cost is, do what's right. And what I say to these young employees is this, is listen, you are working in the wealthiest region of the country. You have people walking in here every day in suits and ties and dresses that at the surface level look like they've got everything working for them. But if you just scratch a little bit under, if you go behind that tie, behind that suit, what you're going to find is that every person that walks in your store is hurting in one way or another. Seek to get to know them in the relationship and then do what is what? Right. Because when relationships work, life works. When relationships work, the church works. Good. How else do you want to be perceived in the community?
Generous.
Generous. Good. You know what's interesting about this word? We're going to get into this in a little bit. This is how unchurched people want to be perceived too. This is a core value church and unchurched people, regardless of where people are on the faith spectrum, people have this innate desire to be generous. We're going to talk about that a little bit more in a moment. How else do you want to be perceived?
Inclusive.
Good. Excellent. What else?
Tolerance to differences.
Say that again.
Tolerance to
people. Okay. Open to differences. Dwayne and Eric, as you're seeing this list, the purpose of serving, worshiping, introducing people to God, giving that love, mentoring, and then the perception of being a relational, warm church that's making a difference in the context of the community through generosity and inclusivity. How does this resonate with the vision that God has given you as leaders in the church? How did talk with us about that?
It's all exactly what we might maybe think the part that for me that it's more internal than many would see.
Yeah.
That drives me is to help people grow in their relationship with God. So for people that know Christ and help them grow, become the people that actually do these things in their neighborhoods, in their workplace, in their communities. Yeah. We actually carry Christ out of the church into the workplace, into the community.
Yeah.
To do that, they've got to grow. They've got to have enough faith in their relationship with God and in God to basically take the step.
Yeah.
Faith to say, okay, I'm gonna lean out there a little bit. It might be a little scary. Yeah. Share. The other thing I think, for me, fun. And the reason for that is because most of the people who don't do church don't think of church as fun.
Right.
So we can surprise them by being fun, whether we're at a sporting event or at the grocery store or have a sense of humor, be likable.
Yep.
That can be a good thing.
So. Yeah. Good. Eric, thoughts?
It's interesting. I mean, it actually does my heart good. I'm in a couple of, I guess I would say, groups where I have a bunch of guys that are not Christians and not church.
Yep.
And for whatever reason, they're very open with me about stuff.
Yep.
And somehow, it was a couple weeks ago, but church came up, and I was feeling very quiet at that point. And oh my goodness, was it a tirade of the things that you don't want the church like perceiving?
Yes.
It's all about the money. It's a bunch of hypocrites. It's people who are, not genuine at all, who are out to take advantage of people who are disenfranchised in whatever way or the other. And it's interesting to me. I mean, I wish I could bring all those back into this room right now to hear the heart of the people who are saying, well, this should not be.
Right. Yeah.
Which is where we are in this direction. Because I just think it's really encouraging. And I just, as I was talking to those guys, I said, you've got to understand. I understand why you feel that way.
Yes.
There may be some truth.
Yeah.
It's not the only game in town.
Yeah.
There's some real churches, some real communities of faith that are vibrant and positive. And it's this encouragement.
Yeah. Well, the reality is, too, as you and I individually begin to incorporate this purpose into our lives, it changes the perception. Because oftentimes, people in the community that are going, I don't want to have anything to do with church. They oftentimes get that perception because of looking at one person or two people, and they're individuals. They might be at different churches, and since they go, well, that person calls themselves a Christian, and yet they don't act like this. And every pre-Christian knows that this is what the kingdom of heaven is about. They never put that language on it, but they know this is what it's about. And so the disconnect comes here because people like us individually aren't integrating these purposes into our families, into our work, into our neighborhoods, into our social gatherings, or this into our schools, for those of you still in school. And so what God is saying is, if we are to be disciples of Him, if we are to truly follow Him, then this needs to be implemented into every aspect of our lives. Now, discipleship is a word that we kind of toss around the church, and everyone assumes they know what it means. And yet, because of its use in the church, overuse in the church in some cases, if we're really honest, think about that. What's discipleship? What is it really? And so if you turn your worksheet, I'm going to give us a working definition of discipleship for this morning, and it's simply this. A disciple is following Jesus by living God's values. That if you're a disciple of Jesus, then you are following Jesus by living God's values. So then we have to ask the question, well, what's discipleship? What does it mean to make disciples? And it's very, very simple. It's nothing more than inviting people to follow Jesus by living God's values with you. Invite people to follow Jesus by living God's values with you. In other words, we're inviting people, regardless of where they're at on the spiritual continuum, to live these values with us as we live them in our work, in our neighborhoods, in our homes, in our social clubs, in our schools. We invite them to do that with us because people in general long for this. And as we pursue the purposes of the kingdom of heaven, this perception changes because they get to know your heart. Which means when you and I mess up in life, they're at a point going, you know what? Yeah, did Emily mess up? Sure. But I know her heart. And that way when we come clean and apologize and make a relationship right again, there's credibility behind it. Okay. So let's look at the journey of discipleship here. Church talks a lot about discipleship. So the question for you is, where do churches most often focus on discipleship? Church Christian, church pre-Christian, unchurched Christian, unchurched pre-Christian. Where do most churches put their emphasis on discipleship?
Upper what?
Yeah, right here. Why do they do that?
Easy.
I agree. And every pastor I've ever asked that question has told me it's the easiest. I agree with that. What else? Easy. Why else do churches focus most of their discipleship efforts up here?
Yeah, maybe because what we had for our on that first sheet where we're talking about, well, what do we want to be like? You know, it's like what's our purpose? And so if we have in our church, there's one or two people that you talk about that are just flaming examples of what Christians are not supposed
right.
to be. If we take care of this here and get the people who already believe, if they can develop that relationship and incorporate more of that into their lives when they leave this building now and for the rest of the week.
Right.
That seems like a
week. We hope that will happen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's obviously not a guarantee.
No. Yeah. Good. What else?
Well, I don't think if you're trying to do it with a pre-Christian, you have to sort of tie to that.
Okay.
You know, you have to use different terminology.
Oh, it's a totally different language. We're going to start talking about that in a second. Yeah. Did you have a thought, or are you just scratching your head? I'll see you later. Okay, let me give you another one that pastors have said. Money. If you put my kid in their Kid Quest class, if you give me a small group where I can be discipled, my kids can be discipled, provide me a youth ministry, good teaching on Sunday morning, worship. We call all of this discipleship oftentimes in the local church. If you do this for me, then I'll give money to the church. And all of a sudden you get this economic engine running inside the church. I sat with a pastor once on this topic, and these two items had come up, and then he said this to me. He said, if I'm really honest with you, Ron, he said, the reason that we focus on discipleship, the reason I focus discipleship on my church here is because at the end of the day, I'm not building God's kingdom. I'm building mine. And I didn't need to really say anything to that because the Holy Spirit had revealed that to me when he had homework. So in Matthew 28, Jesus says, go into what?
Go into what?
All the world.
Preach the gospel.
preach the gospel, and baptize people in the name of Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to obey everything that I have commanded. So where does Jesus tell his disciples to go to disciple people? Go where? To make disciples?
All
the world. Okay, where is that on here? Did the church exist yet when he made that statement? No. So we already know that we're in the unchurched quadrant. Had the church or even Christianity spread across Europe at that point in time? So which group, Christian or pre-Christian, is he primarily speaking to here? So what do we find? Jesus says, this is where the discipleship process begins. Now if we look at Jesus' ministry, what we see is that he walks this road with people. That when they begin the discipleship here, like 98% of the time, it doesn't exclude discipling followers of Jesus Christ. This isn't an either or. It is an and. But when Jesus gives the Great Commission, he says, begin here. Begin with unchurched people. And then walk this journey with them. And so we need to understand that when we do discipleship, when we're inviting people to follow Jesus by living God's values with us, we're inviting people here. It goes back to what you were saying, that our language then has to change. That all of a sudden, this isn't some class, this isn't a small group, this isn't a curriculum anymore. This is life on life. Living together the values of the kingdom of God. The problem is that most Christians aren't living God's values and purpose in their everyday life. I teach pastors pretty frequently in workshops around the country. And usually when I do that, I ask this question. How many of you, by the raise of your hands, right now are intentionally discipling, inviting someone to follow Jesus by living God's values with you? How many of you are intentionally discipling someone who does not attend your church and is pre-Christian? In a group of 40 pastors, I've never seen more than 4 hands go up. If the leaders of the church aren't living the model of Jesus, the church isn't going to live the model of Jesus. And I'd ask you the same question. You don't have to raise your hand. But how many of you are intentionally discipling someone in a relationship with someone who isn't a follower of Jesus Christ and doesn't attend this church yet, that you're just walking this journey with, because that's the journey that God has us to walk with? There's a young man by the name of Jack, and he and his fiance invited me to do their way in Colorado. I was more than happy to do that, as I'm an outdoor recreationalist. So for me, this was a free airline ticket across the country to play and perform this wedding. And so as we're getting ready for the wedding, we're just outside of Rocky Mountain National Park. And we're at this beautiful mountain lodge with this backdrop of 13,000 foot peaks. And Jack's father, John, comes to me and he says, "Ron, can I have a private word with you?" I said, "Sure." So we walk out to the back patio of this lodge. And this father drops his head. And he says, "Pastor, I have a confession to make. I've been more interested in building my business and in making money than I was in teaching my son about Jesus. Would you help me save my son?" I looked John in the eyes and I said, "John, this is a journey that I've been on with your son for the last 3 years already. And it's a journey that I'm going to continue. Here's what's in the works right now, that journey." Now we all know I can't save his son. Jesus can't. He understood that too. But I'm that relationship, one of the relationships, key relationships with Jack, to walk this journey with him. Now we have to ask the question, why was Jack's father grieved? Why was he grieved? And it's simple. He didn't walk this journey with his son. Here this father understood and knew the purposes of the kingdom of heaven that we just talked about. And yet, he had his son in his home for 19 years, and he didn't take the time to walk the journey with his son. And so at this point in his life, he's feeling regret. John was distracted by Jesus' mission, from Jesus' mission, by money and by business. And yet, for every one of us in this room, we too can be distracted from living the mission that Jesus has us on. And so what we need to see is, you, individually, your family, is the solution to walking this journey. We can do this as a church, but we can only do this as a church as you do this as an individual. And as I do this as an individual, and as I do this in my family, and as you do this in your family, the journey that we get to walk with people. The amazing lady that lives here in Northern Virginia, her name's Lauren. She's a very successful real estate agent with Keller Williams. And came to me about 4 years ago and said, "Ron, I've heard about Generosity Feeds and I'd like to do an event with you." To which we said, "Absolutely, we'd love to do that." And then I was chatting with some other people in her office in Reston. The office has over 200 real estate agents in it. And a number of people in that office are followers of Jesus Christ. And I was sharing with my friends that, you know, Lauren had asked me to do this event with her, and they say this to me, "She's an atheist, just watch out." I'm like, I don't care if she's an atheist, I get to do this event with her. So anyhow, we go about doing this event. We're sitting at lunch after this event. She packaged 10,000 meals with about 300 friends to feed local kids here in Northern Virginia who have a need. And at lunch, she asked this question. She says, "So we over fundraised $6,000. What should we do with that money?" And I said, I gave her a few options, and I said, "Or we're leading a Generosity Feeds event at Sterling High School in a few months. You can give the money there." Well, she didn't answer the question right away. And then she said this. She goes, "By the way, do you do Generosity Feeds full time, or do you do something else for a living?" I said, "Well, actually, I'm a full-time pastor, and I do Generosity Feeds on the side." You could see the gears rip through Lauren's head when I said this. Because she had just done business. She had just worked with a businessman for the last 6 months of her life, not knowing that I was a pastor, but knowing that something was different. Within 2 minutes of asking that question, she got up and went to the bathroom. I'm thinking, game over. It's done. She comes back, she goes, "Hey, we were talking about that $6,000. I want you to have it. I want you to put it into that store." So Lauren and I were out for coffee just a few months ago. And she says to me, she goes, "Hey, Ron, I don't know if I've ever told you this, but I've been an atheist." And I said, "Well, Lauren, you haven't ever told me that, but plenty of other people have told me that for you." And we laughed about that a little bit. And I said, "Well, you just made a really profound statement. You used to be an atheist, so if you're not an atheist anymore, what are you now?" She goes, "You know, I think I'm agnostic now." I said, "That's huge. To go from no God to there is a God, that's a major philosophical life shift. So what's happened? What caused that shift?" She said, "Ron, in the 4 years that I've been working with you and your team at Generosity Feeds, you know what I've come to realize in that time? I've come to realize that I never had an issue with God. I had an issue with the church." And I said, "Lauren, I get that. I've been a pastoral ministry," she knows, "for 21 years. And even being a pastor, I felt that too." And so we shared that commonality together and acknowledged that. And then the conversation changed. So what does it mean to know a loving God, a forgiving God? What does it mean to have faith with God? And at that point, she was going through a divorce. Kids were kind of wrecked through that. So we just started talking about faith in life. And that's a conversation that's still continuing today. Just about 8 weeks ago, my wife and I were sitting down with Lauren over a glass of wine and sharing life together. And her boyfriend was there with us, and he nudged me, he goes, "Would you help me get Lauren to church?" I'm like, "Well, Lauren, why don't you go to church with him?" "Well, you know how I am about the church." I said, "I know that. He's Catholic." I said, "But you know what? Have you ever walked in a Catholic church before?" She goes, "No." I said, "Well, then you probably have something to learn whether you think you like it or not." And then we had this whole conversation about how she's created in the image of God and the desires within her. And the desire she has to serve children, to be generous, and to make a difference in her community to come because she's created in the very image of God. So what we need to see is that discipleship begins by building a close relationship with what? Unchurched, free Christians. And it can be that natural. There's no magic to it. And the discipleship involves inviting others to follow Jesus with you by living God's values with you. So this leads to the second question. As a church, who are you most likely to reach? Or you as an individual, who are you most likely to reach? So we're only going to take like 60 seconds on this. I want you to turn to your tables. Who are you most likely to reach? Okay? If you were to walk this journey with someone, don't need to name them, some names might come to mind. Who? What kind of person? Go ahead and talk to them about that, then I'm going to hear back from you.
Yeah.
That's just reality. One of the things that my family and I did because of my passion, I, as the Grace family knows, I love skiing. Love it. It's the greatest passion I have when it comes to sports. And so what I did is I joined the National Ski Patrol, and now what we do every winter is we get a mountain house in West Virginia for 3 months. It only costs us $900 for 3 months. And we live in community with unchurched pre-Christian people for about 6 weeks out of every month. Because they're on National Ski Patrol with me. So what do we have? A shared value for saving lives on the mountain. Sounds a whole lot like the kingdom of heaven, doesn't it? And yet what I've discovered in National Ski Patrol is that we have one of the slowest lifts in the country, so it takes 13 and a half minutes to get to the top of the mountain, which is why you guys go to, what is it, Whitefish. And so, is that it? Whitetail? Whitetail. And so, I will have people on Ski Patrol, because most mountain people in West Virginia live very, very screwed up lives. But they literally will come to me and they'll say, hey Ron, can I get the next lift right up with you? Just you and me. 13 and a half minutes of conversation talking about faith, God, marriage, boyfriend, drugs, whatever they want to talk about. The discipleship that happens on a lift is out of this world. The discipleship that happens in this home is five families are living together, out of this world. And it all comes to this. We have a shared value. Skiing and saving lives. That's it. And so the question becomes, if you don't have any unchurched friends right now that share your values, how do you find them? How do you get them? So one of the things that I did in my life is, you're probably familiar with Eastern Mountain Sports. It's a competitor of REI. And when we were living in Sterling, we had one just 10 minutes from my house. Oh, bummer. So I would go to Eastern Mountain Sports every other week intentionally, whether I wanted or needed to buy anything or not. And the reason I would go to Eastern Mountain Sports every other week was simply to walk in and to talk with guys who also share my love for outdoor adventure. And so I got to know these guys by name, and they were just looking forward to me coming in so that they could share their stories. And when I also had those adrenaline moments and those stories in my own life, I wanted to share my story with them. That's how I got to know Jack. That's how I got to know his fiancée, Christy. Walking into Eastern Mountain Sports every other week just to say, hey Jack, how are you doing? Tell me what you did this week that I wish I was doing with you. What mountain did you climb this time? What did you ski this time? Until he came to me one day and he said, hey Ron, got some bad news and good news. My fiancée and I, or my girlfriend and I are moving to Colorado. And I looked at Jack and he said, Jack, would you do me a favor? When you decide to marry her, would you invite me to come perform this wedding ceremony for you? That's how I got to Colorado. And it just meant putting myself in a place that I love to be. And so for some of you in this room, that's just a, you know, it's painting. It's an artistic form of some nature. So go to the wine and paint places they have around them. Have a glass of wine and paint the same night every week. For some of you, it's athleticism. So go to the gym, same time, every time. Find the patterns of other people's lives that you can begin to build into that pattern with them. Some of you, it's sports. Some of you, it's school or it's soccer. Find what you love in life and then go live it. We were talking about that earlier, Bill, where it's a matter of finding our own passion and then living in that passion and then inviting and putting ourselves in places where unchurched people are so we can invite them into that story with us, build a relationship with them, and begin to walk this journey. And it's not a matter of just throwing up the gospel on them all in one shot. It's a matter of living life with them. The things that God has taught me through my unchurched friends are off the charts. In fact, I'm kind of learning that this process discipling me just as much as he discipling someone else. I become a student in this journey as well, which means when I enter this journey, I don't have to learn. I just have to be willing to have the relationship. The other thing that we have found is this, is that when you put yourself in a place like Eastern Mountain Sports or Hobby Lobby or whatever it may be for you, the gym, and you begin to build these relationships, is that there's a common thread that runs in most of all of humanity. We ran a needs assessment here in Northern Virginia a number of years ago now, and we asked people, what needs do you see in the community? And here's what it came down to. People said this, regardless of their faith, we want to serve and we want to be generous, and if we have kids, we want to do it with our kids. And so I began looking at these values, the value of generosity, which, by the way, you mentioned earlier, generosity and service, and I went, wait a minute. Those are values of God. These are unchurched people telling me that they have, possess, and desire to live the values of God. They want to live the values of the kingdom of heaven. They're just waiting for an invitation to live those values with someone else like you and like me. And then I began to think about that a little bit more, and I began thinking about what does it mean to live in the image of God? We talk about how we're created in the image of God, but do we realize that every human being is created in the image of God? When I go into downtown Washington, D.C., and I look at the different monuments, what I realize is that these monuments are created in the men and women who have changed the face of our country and ultimately the world. The monuments are simply images of these men and women. They possess the very characteristics, the nature of that person. There are quotes that have defined their lives that are reflecting that value system. And so when the Bible says that you and I, Christian or pre-Christian, are created in the image of God, it means that the very nature, the character, the qualities, the values of God are built into the fabric of humanity. And for those who have yet to cross a line of faith, they're longing for those values to come out. They long to live those values because it's the qualities of God in them that they want to live because they're created in their Creator's image. And so when we walk this journey with people, what are we doing? We're inviting them to live God's values with us because they long to live those values. I was at a ski swap. Skiing's a big part of my life. I was at a ski swap just 2 years ago. And while I was there, I met this young man by the name of Ryan. Ryan and I got talking, and we both happened to share a passion for backcountry skiing. Now, in Northern Virginia, as you know, backcountry skiers are hard to find. We have to travel a long way to do that, and we have to be willing to hike up 14,000-foot peaks, and we have to be top athletes and all this stuff, so it's very hard to find. So when Ryan and I realized that we're both backcountry skiers, we just latched on each other. And in the course of that conversation, I said, hey, listen, are you ever looking for opportunities to serve with your wife and kids? His kids were age 4 and 5, and he said, absolutely. I said, listen, we've got this Generosity Feeds event coming up at a local high school. Would you guys be interested in coming? He said, we would love to come. So 2 weeks later, Ryan brings his wife and his 2 young kids to this Generosity Feeds event that we did at Dominion High School. He meets my wife and our kids meet, and we all just kind of clicked together. And we said, hey, would you guys be willing to come over and have dinner in the next few weeks and have a glass of wine together? They said, we'd love to come over. And so Ryan, 2 weeks later, here Ryan and Marissa are over at our house. We're sharing dinner, and I get asked the question, I get asked so often. So, do you do Generosity Feeds full-time, or do you have another job? And I said, well, actually, I'm a full-time pastor. He goes, wow, okay, that's cool. He goes, we're a Catholic background, but we haven't been to church in over 20 years. So we just started talking, sharing lives, still having a glass of wine. By the end of the night, Ryan and Melissa looked at Stephanie and I, and they said this. Listen, we don't have no desire to go back to church right now. We're not into the religious thing, but we're wondering this. Would you be willing to mentor us in raising our children in faith? Would you teach us how to raise our kids in faith? Which is very Catholic language. And I said, absolutely. We'd love to teach you, you know, mentor you in raising your children in faith. So this last March, we went on vacation with them out to Colorado. I've done several backcountry skiing trips with them. I just stayed at their house earlier this week when I was up here again. And throughout all of this, guess what we're talking about? How to raise your kids in faith. Well, there's no way to raise your kids in faith unless you become a person of faith. And yet it's just natural to the journey. And so what we need to realize is this, is that discipleship happens best in the context of relationship, and it happens around shared values. Maybe the shared passions of life, or it may just be the values of generosity and service. But this journey happens around shared values. And it's a journey that you can walk, I can walk. So if you look, just go to the next page in your handout here. Hopefully you can keep it up as I'm going. Here's a journey that has been walked in time. In the 1950s, it was this. Bring people to Christ, introduce them to community, and put them on a cause. This was the Billy Graham era. Come to the big gathering, we're going to lead you to Christ. Then we're going to get you involved in a community, a local church, and that church is going to get you involved in a local cause. Well, eventually that stopped working. In the 1980s, it began to shift. And we saw then you had the rise of mega churches in the country. You had Willow Creek, Saddleback, these churches that were of this attractional model, as they called it. And so these mega churches rose, and the model became this. Come to our church, we'll introduce you to Christ, and then we'll put you on a cause, serve. Well, that has all shifted again. Today, it's like this. Come serve together with us. Come unite with us in a common cause, and in that cause you will find community. And in the community now, you find Christ. And so the pathway is completely flipped upside down from the 1950s to today, where now people in our culture, they want to serve. They're waiting for your invitation to be generous and to serve, so that they can have a relationship with you, which goes back to what you were talking about here. So that in the context of the journey then, as I share with you in the stories, we get to share Christ. And eventually, it may take 5 years, 10 years, 15, I don't know. They cross the line of faith. That's the journey of discipleship. So the story with Jack. After I performed Jack's wedding, he came to me about 8 months later and he said, "Hey Ron, I've got this race coming up. It's a 40-mile backcountry ski race from Crested Butte to Aspen. If you're willing to do it." I said, "I would love to do this race with you." So last ski season, we started training for this race in Colorado. In the course of training for this race, he called me one day and he goes, "Hey Ron, I got great news. My wife is pregnant. I'm just wondering, would you be willing to baptize our child?" And again, that comes from his heritage, because again, Catholic background. And I said, "You know what? Let's talk about that. And talk about what that is and that journey." And as we kept planning for this race, Jack said this to me. He goes, "You know what, Ron? I think this Grand Traverse that we're doing is going to be the best men's retreat ever." "Well, Jack, I think you're right. I think 40 miles in the backcountry with you is going to be the best men's retreat ever." And so the journey continues. So the question for you this morning is this. And I want you to write this down in your piece of paper. Who are you going to invite to begin living God's values